The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 1 Podcast.
Middle of the week, Wednesday. Good afternoon. Welcome in. We have much to do, and we're going to get to some news from Auburn here in just a minute. Let us begin with some headlines that you may have missed for some reason. Is this laying down some smack or what? Brian Kelly speaking yesterday, Houston Touchdown Club, saying how much he likes to beat Alabama. Remember, Jimbo predicted he would beat Alabama 2 years ago at the same club. Kelly did beat Alabama in his first try, though, at LSU. Speaking of Bama, there is a new poll out, and I expect Bama to do better in this poll than they did in the one we showed you yesterday. They were six yesterday. No, come on. Who did this poll? What morons? Oh, ESPN did it. It's a great poll. We'll talk to the author of this poll tomorrow, Mark Schlabaugh. Arch Manning doesn't want any more money. I mean, other than, well, he doesn't want any NIL money. He wants to concentrate on priorities, like maybe not being the backup quarterback to Quinn Ewers. Texas getting closer to the SEC every day, and Auburn has one less quarterback in the QB room. Why is that? Because TJ Finley, the much-traveled quarterback, is moving on. We got Ashford. He wasn't bad last year. He got most of the snaps. A couple other guys. Anybody in that group look like they're a serious threat, or is Hugh Freeze continuing to shop, even though there's not a lot of good shopping available? Let's go undercover with Nathan King of Auburn Undercover. Nathan, good afternoon. And tell us what, after Robbie Ashford, who we saw a lot of last year, what else looks good in that quarterback room? Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Paul. I mean, you look at Auburn last season, and there weren't many other teams in major college football that struggled the way they did in the passing game. I think only six other Power 5 teams finished worse than them in terms of overall quarterback efficiency. Of course, like you mentioned, you started the season with TJ Finley. An injury kind of gave way to Robbie Ashford, who finished out the year. Touchdown interception ratio, completion percentage, all of that was pretty low for Auburn. Now, you know, giving Robbie Ashford, you know, credit where credit is due, he told us at the end of the year he played through six or seven injuries head to toe. Pretty much anything you can name, he played through it. And so, you know, there's a lot of, I think, development still to go for him. You've got Holden Gariner in there, a former four-star recruit from Georgia, who's now entering his second season with the program. But as I'm sure we'll get to, you know, there's a big reason why Hugh Freeze has been shopping the transfer portal for quarterbacks so heavily, and over the last 3 or 4 days, things have really picked up for Auburn in that department.
So he told us, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago that he was looking around. Obviously, he didn't find much. So is there still more time to find another quarterback based on what I know you alluded to it a minute ago, but what are his options?
Yeah, so of course the transfer portal closed on Sunday for non-graduate transfers. And, you know, we were talking to Hugh Freeze last week at a couple alumni stops, and he was saying, you know, I see all the tweets from Auburn fans every time a quarterback goes in the portal, every time they tag him in those tweets. You know, he's seen all of them. And if you remember, Paul, you know, in that first transfer window, they went after Devin Leary from NC State. They sort of kicked the tires on Spencer Sanders. Grayson McCall seemed like he was picking up a lot of traction from Coastal Carolina to Auburn, but the academics didn't work out there. And there is time because really over the past 3 or 4 days, pretty much right after Hugh Freeze said that, you know, hey, we haven't really seen anybody that moves the needle too much, you had Casey Thompson go in from Nebraska, and you had Peyton Thorne go in a couple days later from Michigan State. Those are a couple bona fide Power 5 starters. Of course, Thorne a couple years ago had that great season with Mel Tucker when Michigan State had a good year. And then Casey Thompson, of course, former Texas quarterback, also won the starting job at Nebraska last year. Everything we're hearing is that Auburn has a ton of interest in those two guys for all the reasons we mentioned. They need to upgrade this quarterback room. In fact, Casey Thompson was on campus over the weekend. He neglected to make any comments after his visit, but all indications are that things are positive for him. And Auburn's having a lot of communication with Peyton Thorne right now. No visit for him just yet, but a lot of things are pointing in the right direction for Auburn with him as well. So you have to think, you know, when the dust settles on this, there's a good chance Auburn could come out with one of these two quarterbacks, and I think they really need to do that because of how poor their quarterback play was last year.
Nathan, beyond the poor quarterback play, which is only the most important position on the field, give us an overview of how Auburn looks offensively and defensively, and you know whether or not Freeze can plug and play a quarterback, and there remains to be seen, but what's the rest of the squad look like?
Yeah, and to be fair to Auburn's quarterbacks last season, you know, it would have been tough for anybody to succeed in that offense for Auburn. Of course, that's the reason why Brian Harsin got fired, among of course, a myriad of other reasons why his tenure didn't work out at Auburn. But they had a really poor offense last season. Of course, they cycled through coaches like crazy. And then under Cadillac Williams, as successful, you know, relatively speaking, as those final few games were, they just shifted completely to a run-first offense. And so, you know, things were a little iffy there for the quarterback play. You have to think a guy like Hugh Freeze, who has, you know, the acumen, who has, you know, developed quarterbacks in the past at places like Ole Miss and at Liberty, he'll do a little bit better of a job with the passing game. Yeah, the offense overall, I mean, Hugh Freeze was pretty transparent in spring practice about the strides this offense needed to take. He said going into spring ball, you know, there's only a couple things we need to get better at right now. We need to focus on those couple things because if they try to overload the offense too much, he knows there's a lot of pieces that still aren't in place. But I will say, to their credit, over the last 2 weeks of spring practice, heading into A-Day, the whispers coming from scrimmages, the whispers coming from practices, was that the offense was succeeding a lot more. That coincided with Robbie Ashford taking a lot more of those first-team reps. So take that information for what it's worth. They upgraded along the offensive line. Of course, they lost Tank Bigsby to the NFL draft, but as you know, Jarquez Hunter has been a good runner in the SEC the past couple years. They need to upgrade the receiving core. Look for them to poke around in the transfer portal continually for a couple more receivers. And then on defense, the defensive line is really thin. They're still in need of pass rushers. You lose Owen Papo. You've got a bunch of linebackers that are exciting, but not necessarily proven. And then the secondary, where they could have three or four NFL draft picks next year. That's going to be the strength of this team. I think, you know, going back to the quarterback, I really do think bringing in a guy like a Peyton Thorne, bringing in a guy like a Casey Thompson, who in my opinion, I don't really know how you could look at the numbers and what they've produced in the past and not make this argument, would be an upgrade to this quarterback room, and I think they would be the front runner, either of them, to win the starting job. Maybe that's the difference between a 6-6 and a 7-5. I don't think Hugh Freeze, I don't think anybody on that staff expects Auburn to make massive waves in year one in the SEC West, but getting back to a bowl game would be big for this team because of where their roster was at the end of the Brian Harsin era. And then again, you bring in a quarterback, you bring in a solid, maybe average to above average quarterback, that might be the difference between 6-6 or maybe winning 7 or 8 games.
Finally, in relation to the schedule, it doesn't look impossible. Do you see 6 wins in there? Obviously, it's possible. QB could get you higher. We're looking at the schedule now. California, road game early on, at A&M, Georgia at home, LSU on the road. Ole Miss and State, got to find wins there. At Vanderbilt, at Arkansas, New Mexico State, and Alabama. I don't think it's impossible to find 6. Do you, Nathan?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. I think the over-under heading into the spring for Auburn at a lot of betting sites was around 7.5. I might be the under at that right now. But you look at the non-conference, and this thing plays out pretty well, I think, for Hugh Freeze's first season. Of course, it's never going to be easy to go on the road in the Power 5, but you've got to think with Auburn's talent level, even with a new coaching staff, that Cal game is one that they should win. Vanderbilt is a game you should win. I know Clark Lee took a lot of strides for that program last season, and they feel like they're in a good place moving forward, but Auburn should always beat Vanderbilt. And then you mentioned bringing Mississippi State and Ole Miss to Jordan-Hare Stadium. I think that's really big. That's a big point on this schedule. Those are kind of the games I look at, talking about what difference does a good quarterback, what difference does, you know, a B-minus to a B-plus offense, what difference does that make? Maybe it's beating somebody like Mississippi State at home when you wouldn't have previously. Maybe it's beating somebody like Arkansas on the road when you wouldn't have previously. So, you know, if you take the 4 non-conference games, beat Vandy on the road, and you hold serve against just one of the Mississippi schools, that's 6 wins right there, and I think that's a really good baseline for this team to go off of. Obviously, that's not the expectation for Auburn fans in the long run. They want to get back to the heights of the Gus Malzahn era, you know, competing for, you know, 9 wins, 10 wins, competing for the division every year. I think they're in a good position to do that down the line. But with where this roster was at, with how much of an overhaul Hugh Freeze has had to do, both schematically and in terms of the numbers on the roster, I think 7 wins would be a pretty big accomplishment. Would be 2 thumbs up for this team next year, I think.
Very doable, I think, 7, now that you've described the calendar and the schedule. Nathan, thank you. Nathan King joining us from Auburn Undercover. Fantastic job there. We need to head to the break here. More guests will be joining us shortly. We'll talk about LSU's situation. They don't have a quarterback problem. Your phone calls as well.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Brady Miller joining us in a moment. Later on, Kurt Bowles covers Texas. We'll find out the quarterback situation and also how the Longhorns are doing. Now that many believe they will win the Big 12 in the final year of that conference. So we mentioned the SEC West War of Words. Brian Kelly purely joking yesterday at the Houston Touchdown Club, but some in Tuscaloosa may not have found it all that funny. Remember when Jimbo said 2 years ago, I'm going to kick Saban's you-know-what, and then Saban responded, in golf? And then he did. Brian Kelly at least waited until he beat Saban. Seems like we're talking more and more about people beating Saban, aren't we? Brody Miller joining us, covers LSU for The Athletic. Brody, thank you. Are we to read anything into what Brian Kelly said, or is that just quarterback club conversation? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I guess the answer is probably a bit of it. There's not much to take because it's not even that much of like a statement. I mean, if anything, a year ago he was like out front saying, "I came to LSU to beat the Nick Sabans of the world." Like that, he literally has said on the record, like he came here to prove he can be the best and beat Nick Saban. That was always something he's never shied away from. So like, that's more aggressive even than anything this. So this is kind of just like a, yeah, man. Like I think it's like you said, touchdown club talk. It's just like, hey, man, I like beating the Alabamas. That's fun. So I think it's pretty harmless at the end of the day. Also, it's not even the top three more aggressive things he said.
Yeah, and besides, it was completely true. 15 million people
exactly.
saw him do
point.
It.
Yeah.
I didn't catch everything he said. What else did he talk about when he spoke, which he doesn't, you know, coaches don't do this a lot. They used to do it all the time. This is a rare thing.
Yeah, it's true. I think I think he's talked a lot about, you know, usually at events like that, you talk about how Houston's such an important recruiting area, things like that. But one thing that jumped out to me was it was the first chance for him to talk since, you know, Garrett Nussmeier, the back quarterback, decided not to enter the portal and is staying at LSU, which, you know, might not be like top headline news, but Garrett Nussmeier is a quarterback who has proven in the SEC title game and in the bowl game that he could start for, quite frankly, the, you know, more than probably half Power 5 teams. That he is a really exciting, you know, high upside player who's going to be a redshirt sophomore this year, and he's staying. And I think he talked about how a big part of that was, you know, making sure he's promised that he's going to get developed, making sure he's promised that, you know, you're still going to get first team reps and things like that to develop. And I just think that's interesting in this world of, you know, constant transfer, especially at the quarterback position, to be able to keep a guy to agree to basically wait until his fourth year to be a starter. That's kind of unprecedented for a player of that caliber.
Brody, in terms of Nussmeier, do we know how close he came to leaving, maybe where he was thinking, or was he never thinking seriously about it at all?
Yeah, it's a good question. I know in the winter window, I mean, there were teams calling pretty aggressively. I believe Florida made, you know, a pretty decent offer for him. I think, you know, those things are always, you know, unofficial, obviously, and things like that. But yeah, I think there was a lot of calls, and I think, you know, his dad, Doug Nussmeier, I think kind of handled a lot of it more than maybe Garrett did. But from all accounts, everyone at LSU and people around Nussmeier always said he wants to stay at LSU. I mean, he considers Lake Charles, Louisiana home, even though he moved around a lot with his dad. He wants to be the quarterback at LSU. Sometimes it sounds corny, but sometimes these kids really do just want that. And I don't think he was ever like absolutely not, but from pretty steadily, he was usually saying, you know, no, thank you. That I think LSU did a good job of pitching. One, you know, you will get developed here. But two, I think you could argue that being like, hey, if you wait a year, you'll step into a team with two first-team All-SEC kind of caliber tackles and Will Campbell and Emory Jones, loaded receivers. Like, waiting that 1 year might be a better situation than going somewhere else and going, I don't know, 8-4, 7-5. So I think that was the key of the pitch, too.
I think the answer is pretty self-explanatory, Brody, but when we talked to Brian Kelly recently, and I know he's done it in other public forums, he talks about having two starting quarterbacks. Is that to make sure that Nussmeier hears that?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way to put it, but I think it's a bit of both, right? Like, Jaden Daniels is a starter. We all know that, and Nussmeier knows that. Like, he is going to be the starter come September 4th, and unless some disaster happens, he will be the starter all season, unless he plays really poorly. But I think multiple things are going on there. One, you saw in that Citrus Bowl that they could rotate. They did a good job in that bowl of kind of going a few series at a time and both thrive, and obviously that's not some big game. But there's, you know, Kelly has done that at Notre Dame, and he does not want to do that, but I think he does like knowing that's an option. I think it's all, you can never gloss over the fact that Jaden Daniels is a very skinny rushing quarterback, that, you know, you never know what a backup might have to play, and this is a team that has, you know, SEC title aspirations. So I think there's a lot of that going on. I'd be surprised if Garrett Nussmeier doesn't see the field a decent chunk this year, but yeah, to your point and the way you prompted it, like, it's a lot of keeping Nussmeier happy, but Jaden Daniels is a starter.
Brody, in the aftermath of the season with all these way too early polls, it seemed like some were forcing LSU winning the West down the collective throats of the public, but that doesn't seem to be the case any longer. Some of the more legitimate polls, ESPN, others, are coming out, and LSU and Alabama pretty much bunched together, even though the Vegas lines coming out also indicate that game, as late in the season as it is, Alabama is a touchdown or more favorite. I realize that's a lot of information to digest. I ask you, what are your expectations of LSU this year, especially in comparison to Alabama?
Yeah, it's going to be such a fun debate all season because it's a question of ceilings and floors, right? You know, LSU, I think, is an easy pick to, like, be a front runner in the West in the conference because you could argue of all the top five or six teams in the country, they are the one we know most. They have the most known commodities that we can point to and tangibly prove are good at football. You know, the entire offense is practically back with Jaden Daniels, the whole O-line, multiple receivers, all the running backs, you know, Harold Perkins, Mason Smith's coming back from missing all of last year. There's a lot of pieces that you know, like, all right, this is a top 10 team, while, say, with Bama or even Georgia to an extent, new coordinators, new quarterbacks, you know, a lot of new pieces, and LSU has the same staff intact. And I think that's where it comes down where, like, yeah, I think I'd be the first to say Alabama and Georgia are more talented than LSU. They have more up, even though that can be a lazy term. I think they have a better chance to be the best team. But there's also a more clear path to LSU being a good team, winning 10, 11 games. So I see it both ways. I think the right place to put them is probably, like, yeah, probably even with Bama in the conference, you know, but it's tough to imagine that if Bama gets rolling, they won't be better.
Yeah, and then, of course, the opener against Florida State in the poll we just showed from ESPN, Florida State's in the top three. So LSU certainly has the schedule with two top 10 teams, one in non-conference and one in conference. Brody, what do you think? I know we're just speculating here, but you know the personnel better than we do.
Yeah, I think it's a good point with the schedule that say LSU does win that Florida State game. And that game's going to be so juicy because these kind of are, to the point earlier, the two kind of known commodity hot offseason teams, right? Because they're two teams that showed a lot at the end of last season, bring a lot of guys back, and you have like, hey, this team could be really good, but you're not sure you buy it. So for this to be a season opener, opening weekend game is pretty awesome in the sense that say LSU does win this, now you are probably now all of a sudden top three in the country. And I think they can win, and I think they probably should be a marginal favorite over Florida State. I think I trust them a little more, even though I really like Florida State. I think that offense is, like I said, a high floor, but that defense, LSU's defense, has a chance to be pretty special. Like, there's more room for error. You're replacing all the corners. You know, you're replacing a lot of guys, but you also have two potential All-Americans on the front four, and Mason Smith coming back, and Makai Wingo was an All-American last year. Harold Perkins and the Oregon State All-Pac-12 transfer, Omar Spates, those two have a chance to be really, really great at linebacker, and it's a spring game, but they just looked really athletic and exciting in that spring game. So I think the defense has a lot of upside and a chance to be really great. So if LSU wins that Florida State game, all of a sudden you're looking at a situation where even if you do lose at Alabama and Tuscaloosa, you could go 11-1 because there's no other like massive threat in the West. And if you're 11-1, let's be real, you make the playoffs most years out of the SEC West. So that's why that September 4th game will be so, or September 3rd, forgive me, it will be so big, because if you lose it, then the outlook on that season just feels different. You have to beat Alabama then.
Brody Miller, great stuff as always. As we begin the show here with a couple of great guests, we'll take a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285 when we come back.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're back, and this is the Peach Bowl Challenge. A bunch of coaches, former coaches, good swings there. That's just what you want your fan base to see. You playing golf on a Wednesday. Anybody see Saban? Saban's not playing. He's probably trying to pick your quarterback's pocket and bring him to Tuscaloosa. Let's get back to the calls. And Reed is in Birmingham. Hello, Reed.
Hey, Paul. It's Reed from Birmingham. You doing all right?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Good deal, man. I was giving you a call to see what your thoughts were on the transfer quarterback that was coming to Alabama. To me, I think Saban is playing chess, not checkers, Paul. I think that he knows that Ty Simpson – or Jalen Milroe is going to transfer. So he has a guy that is in, experienced in Tommy Reese's offense. I think it's a chessboard type move by Coach Saban. What do you think, Paul?
Well, there's no downside because you're not going to retain five quarterbacks in your quarterback room. Everyone knows that. And I'm surprised that somebody didn't leave at the end of the portal.
Already.
But, I think Saban said, he looked at Tommy Reese and said, go find me a quarterback. I don't like what I saw.
Well, who do you see being the day one starter there for the Crimson Tide?
Well, I mean, I would bet on Buckner because I don't know why in the world he would have left Notre Dame as a backup, perhaps to take the job over to go to Alabama unless he was guaranteed he would be the starter.
That's a bold take, Paul. I'm going to have to disagree with you. I think that still one of the two guys that we're battling are going to win the job, and he'll be a solid backup with 3 years of eligibility and possibly start next year. But one last thing.
Well, let me ask you, though, Reed, if you didn't like my bold take, if considering neither one of those guys distinguished themselves in the spring, then for all the jet board chess moves of Nick Saban, then what does he have starting next season is my question back to you.
Well, I'm saying next season that Buckner should be ready. You know, if you lose Milroe or Simpson
to the portal. I'm talking about Milroe and Ty Simpson. You made it sound like Nick Saban just outfoxed the entire world for a backup quarterback. That doesn't make any sense to me.
That's not what I was saying, Paul. I was saying it's a great move, thinking long term. In the short term, Bama just needs to get one of these guys.
Rick, I got bad news for you. Nick Saban is not playing the long term game right now. He's playing win next year. This is a critical year for Nick Saban. This is not a 48-year-old coach building a program.
Oh yeah, Paul, this is going to be Nick Saban's year that determines his entire legacy.
Now, Reed, you're being very defensive there about your coach. I think it is going to be a very defining year.
All right. Well, I mean, you've been hammering Bama all year long, Paul. You're the anti.
No, I am not the anti anything. I just speak the truth here.
Paul, you hate Bama.
What's that?
You hate Bama, Paul.
And Reed, would you mind telling me and the rest of the audience watching and listening what you base that on?
I've been listening to your show for the last 2 weeks, Paul, and all you've had to say is Alabama's going to go 9-3.
You just said you've been listening to the show for 2 weeks. That's all you got is to lay a claim to the talk show host for years,
but the last 2 weeks your tone has changed in regards to the Crimson Tide.
Well, so has the perception of Alabama. They just got ranked 6th in the country by this latest poll.
Well, just wait, Paul. Just wait. Keep doubting. I'm just going to hang up and listen. Too much for me today.
I bet you are.
You're out!
Chip is up next in Georgia. Hello, Chip.
Hey, Mr. Paul. How you doing today, sir?
Just call me the hater.
There you go. Well, I don't think so. I just listened to Reed on there. Let me ask you this before I ask my question. Are you allowed to accept a compliment, Mr. Paul?
I don't know. Based on the first call of the day, I need a compliment, but I don't want to upset the Bama folks.
Oh, no, we're not going to do that. I was just going to tell you, we were watching the show yesterday. I wasn't able to call in. But the jacket you had on yesterday, I'm just letting you know this very quick before I ask my question. My wife thought that was a very handsome looking jacket. I just thought I'd pass it on before
I
ask my question.
Your wife, that means a great deal to me. I don't normally get outside the realm, but that's a little bit of an unusual coat that I occasionally wear. Well, thank her for me, please. Thank you very much.
Well, I'll do that. And I know a lot of people to get to my question have been asking about Alabama's quarterback. Let me ask you this. In your opinion, who will be starting at quarterback for Alabama next year? The reason I'm asking, they're ranked number 6, and I think that's probably because of the quarterback situation. I just wanted your opinion on that, Mr. Paul.
Well, Chip, thank you. I think it's going to be Buckner because, as I told the previous caller, I don't know why he would have left Notre Dame unless he had some guarantees. Now, you know coaches will never admit to guarantees, but that's just how I feel. By the way, I just saw a tweet from Pat Smith, our friend in Birmingham, talk about how far Bama has fallen. Well, not according to Vegas. They may not be ranked very high in the ESPN poll. They're usually 1 or 2, but this is according to Vegas. Alabama today projected as a 7-point favorite against Texas. That's a touchdown, of course, but that's a low number considering the rest of the odds for the season. Ole Miss at Alabama, minus 16. Arkansas at Alabama, minus 19. Tennessee at Alabama, minus 10. LSU at Alabama, another minus 7. So what they're essentially saying is Texas and Tennessee are pretty similar teams. You throw out the home field, which, what's that worth, 3.5-4 points, and Alabama's a slight favorite over LSU and Texas. And then Alabama at Auburn, 14-point favorite on the road. So here's the comparison, though, and you talk about, all the hating on Alabama right now. It's not hating, it's perception. A year ago, Alabama went to Austin as a 21-point favorite on the road. This year, at home, Alabama is a touchdown favorite. So that is a big turnaround in perception. That's all we're talking about here, nothing more and nothing less. Jim is up next.
The truth is not in you, fine bum. Bye.
Jim, what was that supposed to mean? Jim?
You're out.
Wow. What did he say again? The truth? He said, the truth is not in you. And then he hung up. Jim, I think Jim's munching too many of those chicken fries from the local Piggly Wiggly. Let's take a short break. I think it's Aldi's, actually. We'll take a short break, and we are back with more after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're back. Squirrel is on the phone, and good afternoon, Squirrel.
That was a weird phone call from your number one leg humper a few minutes ago.
Yeah, Squirrel, you're one of his best friends. How would you interpret that?
Well, that's typical Jim. I've had a few of them type phone calls where he acts like a child and hangs up. He leaves a message and hangs up the phone. I've even got one message saved. You remember the time he was calling me a devil?
Yeah.
And I said, I threw out the line, what if I'm not a devil? What if I'm actually an angel sent here by God to test his faith? And he sent me a message. I kept that message. I still listen to it for entertainment occasionally. But you'll like this. Since he and I-Man started dating a few weeks ago, I've kind of respected Jim's boundaries. Because, you know, I-Man and I have been buddies for a while. And for years, we communicate fairly regular. But I didn't want to call him or anything because, again, I didn't want to upset Jim or make him jealous or anything of that nature. But Friday, I was listening to the Peter Burns show when he was hosting for you. And Jim called in 6 or 8 times, and each time he mentioned I-Man, and then his last call right before the show went off, I mean, it was full-blown I-Man, how he needs to change his name, Twitter name, from Feinbaum I-Man to Peter Burns I-Man or some stupid suggestion like that. So I wanted to get a hold of I-Man, but I didn't want to call him, so I sent out a tweet about Jim and I-Man open French kiss and using tongues and everything on the Feinbaum show, because I knew Jim would call I-Man, then I knew I-Man would turn around and call me. And literally not 5 minutes after I sent out the tweet, I look and here comes a call from I-Man telling me that his your number one leg humper was upset. But I tried to tell you, Jim, don't take the bait for morons like me. And Friday was a classic example. Aloha.
Thank you very much. The Squirrel, to the point. David is up next. Hello, David.
Paul, happy hump day today. Paul, how you doing, brother?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Well, I want to just address Reed and Jim for a minute. You know yourself that I am probably the biggest Alabama fan in the world. But both of those calls were, Paul, Alabama fans are spoiled. We've been used to, you know, we're used to winning. We don't like to lose. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But, you know, you have to be a realist and realize that there's going to be ups and up and down years. And I know we don't know what's going to happen with the quarterback situation this year. But I want to call Reed out and tell him that he was absolutely wrong. I always appreciate you for being truthful, straight down the line, telling it like it is, whether we as Alabama fans like it or not. I appreciate that. But I know we've talked a lot about the quarterback. But again, I think the thing that we're not talking about enough, and the thing that's going to surprise the country, is going to be the defense. I think we're going to come out. We're going to have one of those great Saban defenses. And I know what I'm fixing to say is wishful thinking, but I wish Coach Saban would get on the line and call Sark out in Texas and tell him, you tell that Manning boy he's not starting for you this year. So he needs to get in the portal, and I'll bring him to us, and he can start for 3 years. See you, Paul.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Alabama has 2 first-rounders on the defense. That's for starters. So they could be a really interesting unit. Chris is in Louisiana. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how you doing, Paul? I mean, Hater Paul. Hater Paul.
Wow.
Well, I mean, I was saying that from that first call that he called you a hater.
Yeah, I mean, a Bama hater, too.
Yeah. Look, there's a kid that entered the portal from Michigan State, Keon Coleman. And I think, from what I hear, Georgia, Alabama, LSU, and Texas is really going pushing for this receiver for Michigan State. He's a Louisiana boy, so I'm assuring that LSU is going to try to push hard for him. But, you know, I just wanted to call in on that and get your take on that. And I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, I mean, I think LSU is in on everyone right now. I think that's what has happened in a very short period of time. Logan in North Carolina. Hello, Logan.
Hey, Paul. Jim called in three times on Friday, but yet he can't even give you a full sentence today. What's going on with that?
That was troubling.
Yeah,
and by the way, he's calling me out as being untruthful when he has now told three straight fill-in hosts they're the best of all time.
I know. He can't decide on who the best host is. He just knows that it's anybody but you, but I disagree, Paul. But do you really hate Alabama? Tell the truth. Tell me the truth, Paul.
I have essentially based my entire career on Alabama football. So what do you think?
I think you don't. But I just wonder. There's about 50% of our fan base, I think, that thinks you really do hate Alabama. So I don't know, just based on some things you said, but I don't think so. I mean, I know you give a fair.
I am to the point where when somebody asks me a question, I'm going to answer it. I'm not going to think whether or not I'll upset a fan base, Logan. And I think Alabama fans right now are in a very delicate position where they're so used to, for 17 years, being invincible, and now there's George over there trying to win for the third time in a row. LSU is making some ground, and that's the issue. It's the issue isn't me. It's the surroundings.
Exactly. I mean, I don't understand people. I mean, do they not remember the lean times? I mean, they ought to be thankful for what we got right now. I mean, we still got Saban. It's not. They're worrying too much.
Logan, Alabama fans are defensive right now because the Tide was ranked number 6 in the country. I mean, that's
– Yeah, well
– I mean, and by the way, that doesn't mean Alabama – I still think – I said this the other day. I think Alabama has the second-best program in the country. I don't think Alabama has slipped other than to Georgia.
Right. And I mean, that's only natural. They won the last two national titles, Paul. So, I mean, that's the factual. But let's talk about another team that doesn't get a lot of – talk on here, and that's the Auburn Tigers. You were talking to that guy earlier, and you said you thought they could get 7 wins. I don't see 7 wins for Auburn this year, Paul. I think they would be good to go 6-6.
Well, there's a fine line between 6 and 7 wins. What we've done is given them the 4 non-conference wins, because I don't think California's worth a flip, so that's 4.
No.
And then where do you find another win or two? I would say that run right there, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt, can you get 2 wins there? I think they can, and that really is the difference between 6 and 7 wins.
Oh, okay, so you think they can get Arkansas?
No. So record's 4-0. Can you beat Ole Miss?
Okay.
Can you win 2 of these 3? Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt. That's all you have to do to get to 7 wins.
Oh, okay. I got you. Well, yeah, I think they can beat State and Vanderbilt.
I don't have them winning any of their non-conference road games with the possible exception of Vanderbilt. We head to the break. We have a lot to do. We've had a busy first hour, some pretty crazy calls, including one from the artist formerly known as Jim. It was the shortest call he's ever had, but maybe one of the best. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.